You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, we will be going more in depth into the Bernadette Walker case. On my last episode, I covered what investigators believe happened to Bernadette July 18th, 2020, when her stepfather picked her up from her grandparents' home, where B, or Bernie, as friends and family affectionately called her, was staying, to allow things to cool off at home after Bernadette had just told her mother that her stepfather had been sexually abusing her for over 7 years. I wrote and recorded that episode based off the limited coverage that was available while the trial was in session. I recommend, if you haven't listened, to stop here and go listen. In this episode, we will be taking a deeper dive and adding in details we now know since the trial has concluded. The coverage on this case was limited, and it was beyond frustrating. This case should have garnered so much attention, especially since it was a no-body case that had successfully made it to trial. This is huge, not only in the UK, but everywhere. So many families and loved ones are fighting to get their day in court for their loved ones, and getting Bernadette's case to court gives so many others hope. There was little info about Bernadette and her family dynamics available in the beginning, but now, as the trial is concluded, we have so much more information. So let's dive in. Let's begin with Bernadette's parents. I cannot find information on her biological father or any information about Sarah's exes. So we'll start with what we do know. Sarah and Scott met when Bernadette was a toddler. Sarah was a single mother of five and was pregnant when her and Scott started dating in 2006. Sarah and Scott would go on to have 4 more children together. Sarah's children from her previous relationship and all 4 children her and Scott had together would have the same last name, Walker, as Sarah had them changed through the deed poll process, which we touched on in the previous episode. But let's jump back just a little further. Jill Walker, who is still legally married to Scott Walker, told local papers that Scott was an evil man who tore through her life before he met Sarah. Jill had met Scott when she was 39, a single mom of 2 teenage sons, in August 2004. Scott, the son of a building inspector, has made his living off of mostly odd jobs. He was employed as a locksmith and a glassier at one point, but in his life, more than often, he was unemployed. Jill said that when she met Scott, he was different. Not overwhelmingly charming or smarmy, but very polite and thoughtful. They began dating in 2004, and 7 weeks later, Scott would move in with Jill and her 2 sons. Shortly after moving in with Jill and her sons, the charming facade would soon begin to fall, and Scott's true colors would show. Jill says he began to become very controlling and possessive. Jill remembers he would take her to work and on the way quiz her on if that's where she was really going and what she was really doing. If Jill and Scott were out and about and the 2 of them ran into another man that Jill had known, Scott would straight up ask her if she had had sex with them. As their relationship went on, his controlling and possessive behaviors would escalate. Jill said he never actually put his hands on her, but he would make threats like he was going to hit her, slit her throat, and set her on fire. Jill was terrified of him. 9 months into the relationship, Scott would propose to Jill, and she says at this point, she was so scared of him and so terrified that she couldn't say no. In 2005, with their immediate family present, Jill and Scott would get married in Lindo's town hall on the Greek island of Rhodes. Jill now says that when she reflects back on that day, her memories are blurred from the living hell that soon followed. Jill said that during their marriage, Scott constantly demanded sex from her. He demanded it daily, whether she felt ill, had worked long hours, many days in a row. It didn't matter. If she didn't feel good, that didn't matter to him. If she said no because of one of these reasons, he would badger her and nag her until she finally gave in. About a year into Jill and Scott's marriage, they would get new neighbors. Sarah and her children would move in next door, and soon Scott would have a new distraction. Jill would often find Scott flirting with Sarah across the fence. Jill still isn't sure if Scott and Sarah's relationship had started while they were still together or after Jill had finally escaped Scott, but she remembers thinking to herself when seeing Sarah flirt with Scott, "Please go and take him." Jill finally saw her window to escape Scott's abuse when the local housing authority refurbished their home and emptied out all their belongings. A counselor helped set up the council-run scheme for vulnerable adults, and a friend also helped her get away that day. Once she was safely away, Jill was able to serve Scott with a non-molestation order, and he was banned from going anywhere near her. For those of us who are unaware of what a non-molestation order is, like I was, it's a special injunction provided to help protect you and your children from the harm of an abuser. The definition of harm in this order is as follows: physical violence, actual or threatened, any form of harassment, intimidation, and or psychological abuse. This order in the UK is very powerful, and if breached by said abuser, they can face up to 5 years in imprisonment. The length of this order is determined by the need per situation and can be canceled by another court action. Scott was with Sarah very quickly after this, which is why Jill isn't sure when their relationship actually started. Just a few months after Jill had left Scott and was free and safe from his abuse, Sarah would reach out and message Jill about her concerns with Scott. Sarah explained to her in a message that Scott had asked her to move from Yorkshire to his hometown of Peterborough, which is about 2.5 hours away, and she had some reservations and concerns about Scott when it came to her kids. Jill told her that knowing Scott, that if she moved away with him back to his hometown, that would allow him to alienate her from her friends and her family. Jill flat out told Sarah not to move with him. Jill said, "I told her he was great with young kids, but he doesn't like them when they get a voice. I told her not to move, that he would alienate her from her friends and her family, and taking her that far away would make it worse." Jill says, "I was torn because I was relieved he was leaving, but I was also worried about her, and I didn't want to get involved to attract his attention or cause any trouble for her." Reflecting back on it now, after hearing about Bernadette's disappearance and the trial, Jill can't help but have immense guilt, feeling she might have saved Bernadette if she had warned Sarah more. Jill says she knows how narcissistic Scott is, and Bernadette threatening to come forward about him sexually abusing his own stepdaughter would have threatened the image he built for the outside world. Jill goes on to say, "If you don't know him, he'd be the nicest man you'd ever want to meet. But inside the home, he is vile and nasty. I wouldn't even call him a human being." Sarah decided not to take Jill's advice and moved with Scott to Peterborough. Sarah and Scott's life in Peterborough looked normal to the outside world. Their neighbors in Century Square saw the couple as devoted parents. Both Scott and Sarah used social media showing the world images of the perfect happy family, often tagging photos with hashtag family life and hashtag proud parents. On both Scott and Sarah's social media accounts, there are so many pictures of family time and beautiful smiling faces, photos of their children playing together, and so much more. Sarah and Scott's Facebooks are still active, as well as Bernadette's. We will touch on some red flags there a little bit later. Sarah's page is now set to private, but as of this time that I'm recording this episode, Scott's account is not private, and it gives you such a glimpse into the life they wanted the world to see. It's so haunting looking at these moments with Bernadette, knowing what we know now. Anthony, who is 19, Bernadette's older brother, also explains how false these photos of happy family life are, saying that his stepfather was always emotionally and physically abusive to everyone in the family. Anthony also says that Scott always had wives and girlfriends all over the place. Scott was also someone that had a very grandiose sense of himself. He claimed to have an Associates of Art in Science, and his LinkedIn profile has the quote, "Never knew my potential." In recent years, he has claimed to be a professional gambler. He called himself the Telegraph Tipster, claiming to be an expert horse bettor. It seems Scott is trying to create an image, as he began wearing plain black baseball caps with the word police in the front and posting lots of wannabe macho selfies. Scott had a lot of interests. One in particular was photography, which he shared with Bernadette. Bernadette was attending college for photography when she was killed, and it is said that she was quite good. In fact, she excelled at it. The month before she vanished, she had taken a series of photos of a doll dressed in Victorian-era clothing in undergrowth, and they were spooky and haunting and very well done. Scott saw them and decided to do the same thing with the same doll, but he tied the doll to a tree in different disturbing poses. He also took pictures of a naked man tied up with belts and captioned them "mental, physical, and contained location." I know I don't spend much time on these monsters, and I try my hardest not to inject opinion and stay solely to facts. I have to admit with this one, it's been really hard for me. This case hit my heart so hard when I saw her face and read about what had happened to her from her disappearance to the arrest to the trial to the verdict. It's just broken my heart knowing what this girl and her siblings lived through and what Bernadette didn't get to escape. I wanted to focus on the facts about Scott leading to Bernadette's disappearance and death because it's a no-body trial. And there were many of us worried that we wouldn't get a conviction, even with the amount of circumstantial evidence. So this is why I'm spending time on him. I want to show those who doubt the ability to prosecute no-body cases that you can show the escalations of events that led here. So much was happening in this toxic household in the weeks leading up to Bernadette's murder. Sarah had just had her 10th child with Scott a few weeks earlier and was planning to leave Scott. Sarah had a new man in her life, and Scott was furious about this, and he wasn't ready to give up his family. In the middle of this chaos happening between Scott and Sarah breaking up and new babies, Bernadette went to her mother about the abuse she was suffering at the hands of Scott. Text messages reveal that Bernadette told her mother that Scott had been sexually abusing her for years. We will never know why Bernadette was finally able to feel like she could speak up then. Maybe since she saw Scott and Sarah's relationship ending, she felt safe enough to tell her mom about the abuse she had endured silently for years. But her mother wasn't having it. Sarah called her a liar, told her that she was probably just sleepwalking and confused. She also told her that if she said anything, then the police would come and take all the kids away. A journal entry found later in Bernadette's backpack at the lockup Scott had visited many times after Bernadette's disappearance detailed what happened when Bernadette told her mom Scott had been abusing her. In Bernadette's own words, "Told mom about dad and the abuse, and she called me a liar, threatened to kill me if I told the police. What kind of parents wouldn't believe their daughter? It's fine. I'm going to pretend it's all okay until I leave home. Then I will block them out of my life. If I was brave enough, I would probably have already left or killed myself." July 2020, the Walker household was like a bomb ready to go off with the amount of tension inside the home. Outside of the typical mental and physical abuse Scott was inflicting on the entire family and the fact that he was sexually abusing Bernadette in secret, Sarah was also at this time having an affair with a man named Chris O'Connell, a teacher she had met in evening class. Scott was aware of this affair, but refused to leave the home, even as Sarah and Chris had become an official couple. Anthony, Bernadette's older brother, said, "It was weird because Scott and Sarah continued to live together with all the kids while Sarah and Chris dated. Scott would constantly complain about this arrangement and had rules Sarah was to follow, like Chris could never stay over and Sarah could only stay at Chris's 2 days out of the week." There was so much more drama in this weird relationship dynamic that was unfolding. As to how long Chris and Sarah had been having their affair, well, that's up for speculation and debate. Just as the question of who fathered Sarah's most recent child is up for debate. There are rumors that there was a DNA test done, but again, at this point, it's just rumored, and I cannot find any information on the results of that DNA test. As we can imagine, this would only make tensions much higher in this very toxic Walker household. Anthony said Scott seemed very infatuated with his mother, Sarah, but was emotionally abusive towards her at the same time. The house was complete emotional chaos that July. So when Bernadette went to her mother telling her that Scott had planted cameras in her bathroom, secretly recording her undressing and showering, and that Scott had been sexually abusing her in the game room when she wasn't home, Sarah called her a liar, told her she was confused, and packed Bernadette up and drove her to her grandparents' home that night. Her grandparents' home being Scott's parents. Sarah put Bernadette in the car and confiscated her phone before leaving so that Bernadette couldn't reach out to anyone else and tell them about the abuse. Bernadette's grandparents would later tell the court that that night Bernadette was very upset, crying, saying that she wanted her mom to believe her. She kept repeating over and over again that she wasn't lying. When her grandmother asked her what was wrong, Bernadette told her she couldn't tell her because she was her grandparent. Eventually, knowing they wouldn't get any answers from Bernadette that night, they focused on changing the conversation, and later Bernadette fell asleep on the couch. The morning of July 18th, 2020, Sarah sent Scott to his parents to pick up Bernadette and bring her home. His parents said that while Scott was there that morning, Bernadette was silent. Scott's parents last saw Bernadette alive when she was getting into the car with Scott that morning. Scott was supposed to bring her back home where her mother was waiting, but Scott's phone would be shut off around 90 minutes after picking up Bernadette that morning. When it was turned back on at 1:45 that afternoon, Scott immediately made a call to Sarah's phone that lasted 9 minutes. Sarah would testify in court that she attempted to call Scott at 12:30 that day, and his phone went straight to voicemail. She said that Scott called back at 1:45 p.m. out of breath when he answered. Sarah had asked him why his phone was off, and she said Scott told her it was dead and it had dropped into the footwell of the car. Sarah said Scott told her that he had planned to stop at McDonald's and Bernadette didn't want anything, so he pulled over to roll a cigarette, and that's when Bernadette decided to run. Scott would return home shortly after that call without Bernadette. He would say that she ran off behind some houses and he thought he saw her going over the footbridge towards Westwood. Sarah said when Scott returned home that he was drained, tired, and upset. She said he was crying and scared about the whole situation. Sarah would also claim that she received messages later that day and the following afternoon from Bernadette stating, "I'll be home soon. I just need some time." However, Scott told investigators when first interviewed that on the morning that he picked up Bernadette, he confronted her about the accusations of sexual abuse and that they got into an argument. When he had stopped to roll a cigarette, that's when Bernadette jumped out of the car and ran off. He said he attempted to chase after her but could not. He also later couldn't recall the exact location when questioned by police that Bernadette had run from and which direction she had gone. Investigators had even asked him to draw a map and show them the approximate location of this place, and Scott said he could not recall. It would take 3 days for Sarah and Scott to decide to call and report Bernadette missing. Not only 3 days, but when they finally did, it would be around 3 in the morning. 3 days that the prosecution and investigators believe gave Scott and Sarah time to cover up the murder and disposal of their own daughter. The prosecution and investigators point to the morning of the 18th when Scott's phone goes off for 90 minutes and that 9-minute phone call as proof that Bernadette was murdered that day by Scott. They believe that 9-minute phone call was Scott explaining to Sarah he had killed Bernadette and that she needed to help him cover it up. I have the call Sarah made to the police to report her missing on the 21st, 3 days after her daughter vanished. It's a long call because this dispatcher that takes the report asks all the right questions and questions Sarah's responses. I wish all reports of runaway children were taken this thoroughly and this seriously. The reason I included the whole call is because it's important to hear Sarah explaining herself and answering the questions from the dispatcher. You can also, at times, hear Scott answer questions that Sarah asks in the background. I know not everyone will be interested in the whole call. Those who are not, you can always skip ahead.
Hiya, it's Mrs. Walker. I'm just ringing to report my 17-year-old daughter missing.
Okay, I'll get a report for you there. How long has she been missing?
Well, She ran away on Saturday lunchtime, but I knew where she was until she started messaging at 1 a.m. Yesterday morning.
Right. So she stopped messaging 1 a.m. yesterday morning.
Yeah, and I thought I gave her the day to sort of stew it out a bit because it's not the first time she's done it. And then, of course, I've become aware of the fact that she's not where she told us she was. So obviously, that's why I'm phoning now.
No, that's fine. What we can do then for you is we can get that raised. Bear with me a second and we'll start raising the missing from home report. You said your surname was Walker, didn't you? Walker. Can I have your first name, please?
It's Sarah.
Sarah, Sarah.
Yeah.
What's your daughter's name?
It's Bernadette.
And what's her date of birth?
It's the 13th of 12th, 02.
We now are the 21st of July now, aren't we? So you last saw your daughter physically on the 16th, is that right?
Yeah, I saw her on the 16th. No, the 17th. I saw her on the 17th before she went to her grandparents. And then her dad picked her up on the 18th when she sort of jumped out the car and ran off.
Okay, so when's the last time either you or dad see Bernadette?
It was around, I'd say, what, 1 p.m. on the Saturday the 18th.
Okay, and where was Bernadette at that point in time?
Where was it she jumped out the car and ran off and stopped my dad there? It was between Salters Way and Mount Stephen Avenue. It was around that area. They
Okay,
pulled over to...
where did she say she was going?
She didn't. She just she was just it was just it was just talking to her about, because there'd been a row and that's why she'd gone to the grandparents. And he just said, "Look, we'll go home. We can talk about things at home." And she went, "I'm not going home. I've told you." And she just got out and ran. And he
Okay.
pulled over to roll a
That's fine,
cigarette.
but then you knew where she was, or you thought you knew where she was, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Where did you think she has been for the last couple of days?
Well, she messaged me and said, "I'm at Luke's," which is her ex-boyfriend. I'm going to Luke's. That's what she said at
So did you go to
1:27.
Luke's and see whether she was there, or did you make contact with Luke or his parents?
I didn't know because his parents are Polish and she doesn't speak a word of English, but she'd been to Luke's before and was confirmed that she's there.
And
Like
you
we've
took your
been over.
daughter's word for that she was there, is that
I did,
right?
yeah, because yeah,
And
I
what's
did,
made
yeah.
you believe now that she's not there?
Because one of my sons was messaging Luke and said, "Right, my sister, can you tell my sister to phone my mum?" Because we were just communicating through text messages, and he went, "Can you tell my sister to phone my mum?" And he went, "Well, tell her yourself." And he went, "Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm telling you to tell her." "Well, why? What?" And he said to my mum, "What's it got to do with me?" And he said, "Because my sister's there." And that's when Luke turned around and said, "Well, no, she's not actually. So what's going on?"
Okay, so
And then
where
we
did she
spent
leave
time.
Luke's, or hasn't she been at Luke's at all?
Well, I don't know whether he's just saying maybe she's there. This is why I thought it was best to
Okay,
phone the police.
so
But
have you been to Luke's house to see whether she's there?
no, because I took her word that she was there, because last time she went there,
Okay, but
she
when
was.
you found out she wasn't there, have you attended Luke's house to see what he knows?
No, I've spoken to him on Instagram through message, and he's assured me she's not there. And I spoke to a friend, Chloe, because I thought, well, that's the next part of call, and she's not there. So that, like I said, that's why I've decided to come to you guys rather than go knocking on people's doors. So that's the problem with the worrying thing I've got with my daughter. If I knock on someone's door and she runs from there, where she was safe, then I don't know where she's going to be after that.
And where did you find she's not at Luke's?
I'm just going to go on Instagram now and find out when I message Luke. He said that was at 8:54 p.m. last night. and we thought she was at Chloe's by the time.
We discovered she was not at Luke's at 8:45 hours on the 20th.
No, that was PM, 8:54 PM.
8:54 PM on the 20th.
Yeah.
On the 20th, the 7th. And then when did you contact Chloe?
Well, I, at that point, I followed Chloe on Instagram, so that's the only access, so that was the only contact I could get her through. And she didn't accept my request till this morning.
Mhm. And what did Chloe say this morning?
Well, at 8:28 AM, I messaged and said Bernadette's mum and asked about, and then she said, I'm sorry, but I haven't heard a thing from her. I messaged her 3 days ago and she hasn't replied. And then she said they'd messaged in the group chat, the college, because the college group have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
The college students have a group chat, sorry, that's what I mean.
Okay. So, let's just make sure, because I want to get this across. The informant stated that her daughter, Bernadette, was there with her grandparents after an argument. Dad went to collect her on the 18th of the 7th, and as he pulled up in the car, she jumped out and near Salters Way and Mount Stevens Avenue. Is that right?
Yeah.
Bernadette contacted mum to say she was going to stay at Luke's ex-boyfriend. Informant discovered that she's not at Luke's at 20:58 on the 20th, and then she contacted another friend, Chloe, who stated that she's not heard from Bernadette for 3 days. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just get that across the control room.
In hindsight, I wish I'd phoned you guys a bit sooner, but I didn't want to push her away by, I don't know, stupid idea.
So there's quite a lot of questions we're going to go through. All right, so I've got first name Bernadette, so she's Miss Bernadette. Does she have a middle name?
It's Louise.
Louise Walker. Date of birth 13-12-02.
Yeah, because when she messaged me at 1 o'clock this morning, she said, stop messaging my friends. So that's what made me think she's with Chloe, and Chloe's saying she's not, because it's obviously somebody I've messaged that she's with.
Okay, is she a white female?
Yeah.
And height and build?
She's about 5'5", yeah.
Build?
I'd say medium. Build. She's about size 12 to 14, yeah, but a medium build.
Okay, and did you say she was 17?
Yeah.
And hair colour?
That's a good one. It's multicoloured. She's got sort of bleached hair that she's put pink and green in, and then the other side, dark brown. We do have a picture of her anyway, which sort of...
Any scars at all, tattoos, piercings that would be noticeable?
She has a nose piercing. She's...
Is it a stud or a ring?
It's a ring. She's got three earrings in each ear. And she has a lip. They're just underneath her lip, and she's taken one out, and I think she's got... She's got one lip piercing to one side, and then one in the middle that she took out.
So she's got studs?
Yeah.
So, okay. And did she have any spare clothes with her?
No. And you asked about tattoos. She's done, when she was in a relationship with Luke, she did these stick and poke, or whatever they're called, to herself, like a little squiggly heart on her left wrist.
Was it a home done?
Yeah, and her left ankle, she did a heart. I think Luke did the heart for her. They're quite faded now, but it didn't go down very well, but you know.
Okay, what was she wearing last time you saw her?
Did she have a hoodie on? The Slytherin one or something. Whatever it is. Yeah, she had. She had some black. No, it's a black hoodie with a green snake on it. I can't remember exactly what it said on the front. It starts with an S. Something with bottom wish anyway. She had some sort of skin tight black jeggings on. She's wearing her black boots and oversized denim jacket.
Okay. Has she got a mobile phone? You said yes to that, didn't you? What's her mobile number?
Yeah, I'll just get you that. I don't know it off by heart.
And is the phone switched on?
It's not switched on now, no. But she didn't take a charger. And she knows my mobile number off by heart, so that's... I'm thinking if her phone's been dead, she could have contacted me with someone else's.
And what did she say when she got out of the car?
I wasn't there, but her dad had said something along the lines of, you need to apologise to mum when we get back. And then obviously... You can't just be having attitude and things like that. And she says, I'm not going home. And he stopped to roll a cigarette and she just jumped and ran. So he sort of jumped out the car, locked it and then ran after her. But of course he was delayed because he had to pull the car, because he'd only pulled it sideways, so he had to pull it onto the curb so he weren't blocking traffic.
Has she been missing before?
She has, yeah. She's done it before, but she's always messaged then, oh, I'm at Luke's, and then he's messaged to confirm that. Like when I've messaged and said, is she at yours? I suppose that's why I didn't chase it up as soon this time, because that's where she goes.
Anything out of this out of character for her?
Anything else out of character?
Is this whole thing out of character or not?
No, it's not, because she has run off before and we've just told the other kids that she's staying out at a friend.
Okay. Has she any access to money or bank or debit cards, credit cards?
I don't believe so. We had some cash going missing and I'm wondering if she did take it now. I mean, I've got quite a few children, so I can't exactly point a finger at one of them.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think she's got access to money, yes or no?
Yes, I do, actually, to be
How
honest.
How much
someone
do you think she's got access to?
Well, if anything that my son said is anything to go by, he said that she'd sold the spare Xbox on the market and got £100. This is what my son said. He's not been the most reliable of sources.
And does she have any access to... debit or credit cards?
No, she doesn't have any of those.
And no mental health issues?
No, I do feel she's getting a little bit down, but I think that's due to the whole coronavirus and being stuck indoors.
Any powers to detain under any mental health acts or any care orders?
No, nothing like that.
And you've searched the home and obviously she's not there.
Yeah.
Has she got any access to social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, WhatsApp, and if so, have you checked them?
Yeah, she's got access to her Instagram, which months and months ago she blocked me on because I called her out for, like, I had a word with her about the fact that she was posting images of her in her underwear. So then she blocked me on it, and I didn't think much of it because I thought, well, you know, she's 17, she's growing up. I don't really need to be seeing her business. She hasn't accessed her Facebook because I know the password, so I've been on there. I think, hold on a minute, did my mum say she messaged her? She did, didn't she? My mum said she messaged her, didn't she? Yeah, sorry, my mum said she messaged her, and I know she hasn't got my mum's new phone number, so that must have been her Facebook. Yeah, so she has been on there to message my mum then, her nan.
Okay, when did she contact nan?
Um, I haven't been sleepless. I haven't been moving for a day. Yesterday, yeah.
And what did she say?
She'd asked if she could go and stay with us for a little bit, and then my mum said, well, I messaged her back and said, yeah, of course you can. And then there's been nothing after that.
So we've contacted. So what's Luke's contact number, please, or address, or surname?
I don't have his contact details. I have his Instagram, because from last time she went there, apparently he's moved down the street.
Okay, so what's Luke's surname?
I don't know. What is Luke's surname? Let me have a look on her Facebook. I never thought of asking that. See, I've never had to do this before. I'm just looking through these screenshots on her Facebook.
Why don't you just go to friends and then type in Luke?
Yeah, it doesn't come up. He doesn't have his name on the Facebook. Because since I went onto her Facebook last, I can't access it now. She's changed. So she's obviously changed the password in the last day. I'll just message him now. So have you got?
We'll try and get further details. What about Chloe? Who's she?
Again, that's just on. On Instagram, and she goes to college with her, doesn't she?
Anybody else? We contacted obviously Nan, and she's not heard.
I spoke to someone she was talking to that she met on TikTok, and I've spoken to him. Warren, she met him on TikTok, and I found him on Facebook. Well, my son found him first and then gave him my details to message me.
So what have you spoken to Warren about?
I'll go back to... He actually messaged me first and I'm sorry for everything I said with B. I'm confused. I don't know where she is. I messaged him at...
So what's
July.
Gone on with him and B? Sorry, I'm a bit lost, Sarah.
But apparently they'd had a bit of a disagreement. And he just said, I don't know where she is. Because he spoke to my son first. My son messaged him and said, do you know where my sister is? And I messaged and said, I know that being her boyfriend and all, I'm wondering if she's contacted you.
Do we have any locations that she may have travelled to?
He's in East Sussex, and she was supposed to go visit him and spend 2 weeks there.
What, with Warren?
And I said, well, I don't want you, well, with his mum as well. And I said, well, I'm not happy about you going on your own. Absolutely not going to happen. This is part of the
disagreement.
Okay,
but she's not with Warren, is she?
Well, he said she's not.
And where does he live? East Sussex?
East Sussex. The last message he got off her was at 1:28 yesterday morning. Just saying, I don't know what to do yet. I think my options open by whatever that means. Because he'd phoned her and apparently she cut him off and then.
Okay. Have we then any locations that she might travel to? So instead of Warren's, Luke's, or Chloe's, anywhere else?
Any location she travelled to? Yeah, we thought originally Chloe's or Warren's.
Okay, we've already gone that anywhere else that we thought she might go to.
No, that's the only reason, because if it was anywhere else, I would have checked around her.
So you thought she was possibly at Chloe's or Luke's or Warren's, is that right?
Yeah, when we found out she went at Luke's, I was convinced she'd gone to Chloe's then. And then when obviously Chloe said she wasn't. But what's made me feel that she might still be at Chloe's, and Chloe might be saying that she's not, is because we had a message, the last message I got was telling me to stop messaging her friends.
Okay.
So she's obviously at one of theirs because they're the only people I've messaged.
Yeah, it all depends because you know what they gossip like. People say, oh, you know, such and such, we know where they are. And before you know it, they'll all go, no, 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 I don't know where she is. And she could be stopping somewhere else. And someone said, you know, your mum's searching for you.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, I've tried to keep it to just a few things. Because even my daughter, the more people that get involved, the less likely she's going to be to come home of her own free will. I mean, I know she's old enough kind of to sort of make that decision, but as long as we just knew that, where she was, to be honest.
You probably won't know the answer to these, but I've got to ask you anyway. Has she got increased phone use at all?
No. I don't know. I would have said probably not because she's not answering.
Okay.
Unexplained
cash or items?
Again, I can't answer that one because I haven't seen it. I know she said.
Okay.
Well, I know she's had her phone tapped.
Has her mood changed recently?
In the last couple of weeks, yeah, she's got a little bit down. But then again, we put that down to. I put that down to the fact that she's not at college and she's been stuck in the house. When it's only since she's been gone that I've realised just how many of her passwords she has changed. Because we've been quite open in this house where we've always said, you know, we need the same password so that I can check from time to time to know that you're okay. And then I know she changed her Facebook password over the last day because I can't access it now. But she changed her Facebook password about a year ago, but I managed to log into it through her old email address by saying I, you know, forgot password. It's been changed again.
Have you got any more information you think police might need to know that could assist us in locating your daughter?
No, I don't think so now. Have we got any information that might help in locating her?
Sometimes people, that question just triggers something. Don't worry if you haven't, it's no big deal. I'm just going to do a check on something, bear with me. Have you checked any of the hospitals at all?
No, I honestly have not thought of that. Checking the hospitals.
No, I can do that, it's absolutely fine. Which is the hospital she's most likely to be at? I guess that's Peterborough City.
Yeah. Can't believe I didn't check that.
We do it all the time. Do you know, it's kind of our port of call, really.
I think I just, because I was hearing from her, and I know how stubborn she is, but just didn't put, you know, I feel a bit bad now. I didn't check that.
No, don't worry, I can do that. So what I've done is I've asked for officers to attend, so they are likely to come out to your address at some point this evening. It will be after all the immediate grades. However, what they will do in the meantime is they will pass out information on her to the local policing team, just in case anybody's seen or heard anything. I'm going to contact the local hospital and deal with that. They have asked, what's prompted you to call us at 3:30 in the morning? So.
I was going to call earlier, but my baby's been having this screaming and cluster feeding because she's breastfed. I've been busy with her because I did go on the online chat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did try and report it by web chat, did you?
Yeah, I went on the web chat and they said you need to phone in, and I did say, well, I'm just feeding my baby. And they said the sooner the better, and then she messed her nappy and was, you know, babes, like, and that was it. That's the only reason it's taken me a little bit longer.
No, that's fine. So what I'm going to do, okay, your instant number is 44. I will send you a text with that. Now, if she does make contact or you get any small piece of information or fingers crossed she returns 2 minutes after we put this phone down, pick it back up again and just let us know, all right? We will have to do a safe well self and well check, all right?
What is one of those?
Safe and well check. So if you say she arrives home in the next 5 minutes, police would come and check on her and try and find out where she's been, what she's been up to. Obviously, we have to look at people being exploited, all those kind of concerns, really, you know, just to make sure that nothing bad has happened to her when she's been away. So they will also try and make contact with her. So they'll make contact with your daughter directly and say, look, we've got concerns for your welfare. Please make contact with us. Quite often people will talk to us and not talk to you because they don't want us looking for them. So they will sometimes engage with us and say, look, I'm here. And as long as we can go and do a welfare check on wherever they are, especially with her age, we can then say, yep, she's in a safe environment. You know, we're happy for her to be there. She'll return to you when she wants to.
So that's what she said to me in one of her messages. I'm okay and I'll come back when I'm ready.
Yeah.
And then I did think, well, because of her age, you know, okay, then she's messaged me, she's told me that. But then the only thing that did concern me then is that she wasn't where she said she was.
Yeah. That's why, because I think whenever you've got anybody that is missing from home, you know, regardless of age in your case, if they're, you know, obviously you've got to allow them a short space of time to make sure that, you know, they're not going to walk through the door 2 minutes later. You know, if they said they're going to be back at 6:30, you know, given to 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, whatever, depending on what their normality is, you know, then start ringing it through, really. Any concerns at all, you know, some people ring within minutes of someone going missing because it's not like them, you know, so...
Yeah, that's why I've given her a couple of days, because like I say, it's not the first time it's happened, so...
Yeah, but always try and really confirm where she is as well. It's always really useful to kind of double check that. But again, she is getting to that age, it's a little bit more difficult, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Do you know her eye colour?
Brown, yes. Yeah.
Brown hair. Does she wear glasses at all?
Yes, she does. She's got black glasses.
And has she got long hair or short? Or
yes,
long?
Yes, it's long. It's right down. It's just her shoulders.
And English speaking?
Yeah.
Okay. Skin colour, you said white, didn't you?
Yeah.
Got that. Okay, that's all gone on. So, yeah, we're on it now, so we'll already start looking. And if we need to ring you, quite often we do ring you from a withheld number. So if you get a withheld number, just pick it up. It's likely to be us. All right.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
Any questions at all?
No. I was going to ask about whether you guys would bring her on, but you kind of answered that when you said if you find she's safe. So.
It depends. We can try and bring them home. however... If we think that person is just going to run again, and say we found them at Luke's, and obviously you said you're quite happy for her to be at Luke's. I'm not saying she is at Luke's, obviously we don't know at this point in time, but say she was there, and we've gone to Luke's house, and we found her safe and well there, what is the point as you know, returning her home? Because she's likely to run off again. So we could come back to you and say, look, she's in a safe and happy environment. We are happy for her to be there. She wants to be there. We've got no reason to return her. If, for example, we found her, God forbid, but asleep on the streets, we are more likely to try and pick her up and get her home because she's not in a place of safety. All right? So, you know, we do try and obviously return people, but we've also got to look at what the likelihood is of them running again. So if they are in a safe place, why are we risking them not staying in that safe place? And
I'm quite happy if she's safe for her to stay where she is and come back when she's ready.
Yeah, absolutely. We just need to know that she's safe, don't we, really?
Yeah.
Any questions at all?
No, I mean, if I hear from her again, do I just
update us straight away. Yeah, just give us a call. Yeah, obviously communicate with her. Try and work out where she is. Try and get her to go negotiate with us if she doesn't want to speak to you. You know, sometimes it's harder speaking to parents. And if she's had a little falling out, she could be just, you know, niggled with you, in which case, you know, she doesn't want to speak to you. You know, she's a teenager, these things happen, where she might speak to somebody else. So, you know, yeah, keep us updated on anything you hear. Obviously, keep in contact with her. But we've already started sending links out to her already to try and obviously get her to engage. And we'll no doubt be out to you sometime this morning just to try and, you know, get pictures, that type of thing, as well as. All right.
We aren't actually getting the pictures printed recently.
That's all right. That's absolutely fine, because that's what we're going to send them around at. We all downloaded onto our system, so that's absolutely fine. Most people don't have pictures printed now, so that's absolutely fine.
Okay, yeah, that's great.
All right. So all I'm going to ring the hospital now. I'm going to see what we can find out there, and, yeah, we'll go from there. All right.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
I go much more in depth into the initial investigation into Bernadette's runaway case in the first episode, as far as text messages and exact location data. I will give you a summary from here. After the runaway report call made by Sarah, officers do come to the Walker house on the 23rd to take a deeper look into this case. They want to interview Scott and Sarah and look at Bernadette's room for possible clues as to where she may have gone. When officers arrive, they said Scott was visibly upset, but not about Bernadette. He began telling officers about Sarah's new relationship and how upset he was about that. Right away, investigators knew something wasn't right here. Sarah and Scott show officers messages from Bernadette saying that she had run away on their phones and social media. Investigators notice something's not the same with her messages, so they decide to do more digging into Bernadette's social media, where they discover messages Bernadette sent to online friends prior about Scott sexually abusing her. Bernadette had reached out to a few friends online about Scott's abuse and about wanting to talk to her mother. There were also friends online that saw red flags from Scott as well. Remember when I said we would come back to Bernadette's Facebook? There's a status change comment that is particularly disturbing on her Facebook page that Scott publicly commented on. When Bernadette started dating her now ex-boyfriend Luke, she of course made it Facebook official and changed her status to in a relationship. On the post, Scott comments, "Any boy who kisses you better have the image of me in their head." Along with this comment, he adds a black and white photo of himself holding up fists to the camera. I posted a picture of this thread on my webpage and social media. You should really go check it out. It instantly has possessive, jealous boyfriend vibe, and the selfie you post along with it just brings it to a whole new level. A friend of Bernadette, Jasmine Hilton, comments under Scott's comment, "Scott Walker, we all know you're soft as shit." Bernadette comments, "Scott Walker, why?" with two laughing, crying emojis. Scott replies, "Laugh my ass off," to which Bernadette replies, "Cringe," with lots of ease. Jasmine then comments to Bernadette, tagging Scott, "Totally agree 100% with Bernadette. I agree the picture is totally cringe. Like, act your age already." Now many others who have found her page in the news of her trial have left comments and opinions under that comment as well. Back to the runaway investigation. It was glaringly clear at this point something bad had happened to Bernadette. The final weeks of her life, Bernadette's social media showed she was dealing with some heavy, dark things. She posted many times about death, and her death in particular. A few weeks before her death, she changed her Facebook profile to a picture of a gravestone she had taken, an angel lying across a cross. And under it, she had written, "Life is just a dream for the dead." On Instagram, she wrote a post, "Can you please play this song at my funeral?" and posted the song lyric by The Irrepressibles. The lyrics she shared were, "I bled every day now, for a year, for a year." I had never heard of this band, and I decided to jump on YouTube and find this song. It's absolutely beautiful, in my opinion. It's definitely a song I can understand spoke to her in her life. I recommend checking it out. It would take 6 weeks for investigators to build a case against Sarah and Scott. But with phone records and pinged locations the day of Bernadette's disappearance and the days after, They were able to build a case as to what they believed happened July 18th and the days that followed. Bernadette's friends would testify in court that Bernadette had a daily presence on social media. She used Snapchat daily to communicate with friends as well as classmates on group projects, and no one could reach her after the 18th. Friends testified that they sent her message after message on Snapchat just to see Bernadette hadn't even read them. What investigators now believe happened on the day of July 18th was that after Scott picked up Bernadette from his parents, he did confront her about coming forward to her mother about the sexual abuse. They believe things escalated in the car, and that's where Scott killed her, either by suffocation or strangulation. They believe he used his vehicle as shelter to murder her in broad daylight. The only thing they're not sure about is when he disposed of Bernadette's remains. Was it that day? Was it in the few days before Sarah and Scott called police to report Bernadette as a runaway? They know on the 18th and the following days that Scott visited a local lockup garage storage unit that he owned several times. This lockup is where they would find Bernadette's backpack and her diary. Well, they didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle. They had enough evidence to present to the Crown and arrest Scott Walker on murder charges 6 weeks into their investigation. Prosecutors and investigators believe that in the 9-minute phone call Scott made to Sarah on the 18th, that they put a plan together to hide Bernadette's remains and set up a series of messages sent out from Bernadette's social media accounts and phone to friends and family that she had run away, hoping to throw the police in another direction. But with a technological footprint, they were able to prove the opposite. Investigators were able to prove that Sarah and Scott had hacked Bernadette's social media accounts and sent those messages claiming she had run away. They were also able to track Sarah and Scott's phones in the days following Bernadette's disappearance as well, which gave them a timeline to their theory that Sarah and Scott worked together to dispose of Bernadette's remains and any evidence in their involvement in her murder. July 20th, all three phones, Scott, Sarah, and Bernadette's, would be connected to the network and ping at the lockup garage Scott owned at 12:27 a.m. in the Calbit area. Based on the phone pings, all three phones left the lockup around 12:37 a.m., and Scott's vehicle was spotted around this time by a traffic camera showing his car going northbound on the A-16. All three phones would connect to the Crowland Tower at 12:42 a.m., Sarah's phone would disconnect from the network at 12:43, followed by Scott's disconnecting at 12:44 a.m. Bernadette's phone would stay connected and continue to ping off of different towers in the Calbit area, showing that the phone was moving as it sent text messages back and forth to a friend. In the previous episode, I read the transcript of these text messages, which are incoherent because they are lacking context. But you get the gist of this friend reaching out to Bernadette saying that her family's looking for her and she should go home. At 1:29 a.m., the last text goes out from Bernadette's phone to this friend and then is disconnected from the network. At 3:03 a.m., Sarah's phone would connect to the network again. And at 3:07, it would ping off the tower showing that she was home in Century Square. Scott's phone would connect to the network again at 4:08 a.m., showing him home at Century Square as well. But Bernadette's phone never connects to the network again and has never been found. On September 10th, 2020, Scott would be arrested in his Century Square home, charged with murder and two counts of perverting justice.
It's firing for jail arrest on suspicion of sexual assault of a child and controlling coercive behavior. Okay.
Not just see Sarah.
No, not at the moment.
No.
We'll explain to her what's happened.
We'll explain to her. Once you get to
the it's all the kids. I mean, we know about the accusations and stuff.
Mm.
And two of the boys, they both heard her saying what she was like about it.
What you need to do is let my colleague give you a search, okay?
Sarah would be arrested and charged with four counts of perverting justice. Two, she would end up pleading guilty, and two, she would plead not guilty. So much came out in the trial about the abuse of this sweet girl and what she suffered. The prosecution was able to show Scott's pattern of abuse and the escalation of that abuse. On July 26, 2021, Scott Walker was found guilty by the court for murder and two counts of perverting justice. Sarah was found guilty on two counts of perverting justice, the two she had not pled guilty on. Sarah still claims she had no knowledge of Bernadette's death, but admits to breaking into Bernadette's social media and sending messages pretending she was Bernadette to cover the allegations of sexual abuse.
Good evening. Well, it's still not known how Bernadette met her fate, but the last confirmed sighting of her was when Scott Walker picked her up from his parents' house in Warrington in Peterborough in July last year. Now, it's worth noting that even though Bernadette referred to Scott as her dad, he wasn't her biological father. Now, the prosecution said Bernadette had told her mother, 38-year-old Sarah Walker, a few days before that Scott Walker had sexually abused her over a number of years, but that Sarah didn't believe her daughter's allegations. 3 days after Bernadette was last seen, Sarah reported her missing to the police. Well, despite extensive police searches, Bernadette's body has never been found. Prosecutors said that Scott Walker killed her to prevent her pursuing her allegations of sexual abuse any further. For the following 7 weeks, Scott and his former partner, Bernadette's mother Sarah, deceived friends, family and the police by laying a false trail to suggest Bernadette was still alive and had run away from home. Well, we heard from Detective Inspector Justine Jenkins a little earlier.
I'm delighted that Scott's been found guilty. The evidence was strong against him, and I'm just pleased that the jury were able to understand it all and make the right decision. We still don't know where Bernadette is. I'd ask anyone that does have any information to still come forward. We would still like to give her the proper burial that she deserves.
Well, jurors found Scott Walker guilty today of murder and 2 counts of perverting the course of justice. Sarah Walker had previously admitted 2 counts of perverting the course of justice and today was found guilty of another 2. Both will be sentenced at Cambridge Crown Court in September.
Detective Inspector Justine Jenkins from the Major Crime Unit said, "I am pleased we've been able to get justice for B. After what has been such a tragic circumstance, I hope now that we may get answers we need to be able to find her and lay her to rest. If anyone has information about this investigation which may help us find B, please get in touch. We may never know the truth about what Scott did and why, but we do know that B had made allegations of abuse against him. My plea to anyone who may have been subject to abuse is to speak to us. B thought she could confide in her own mother, who should have been able to protect her, but instead she met a tragic end." Sarah's mother, Pat, said, "I can't believe he killed my beautiful granddaughter, but he's been found guilty. Now he must tell us where he's hidden her body so we can give her a decent burial." She went on to tell the local paper, The Sun, "I feel like I've been in a coma for years and just woken up to this dreadful news. I feel like there's 2 angels on my shoulder, one saying Bernadette's out there waiting to be found, and the other saying she's not. But she's not the type of girl to run away. Deep down, we know she's not alive, but we just want to know where she is to bring her home. He's the only person who knows where she is." As for Big Brother Anthony and others who love Bernadette, their fight isn't over. Anthony, even while struggling with the reality that his sister is dead, wants people to continue to talk about her case. He wants to bring her remains home so that he can give her a proper burial. Someone saw something either on the 18th or thereafter that could help investigators locate Bernadette's remains and help bring her loved ones some peace. Anthony told the BBC that he acknowledged that his sister might be dead, but at the moment, the bigger part of me is trying to say she's alive and must be alive because there's no body, there's no murder weapon, there's no proof to actually prove she's dead. I won't stop until I have actual answers. Even if, God forbid, she is dead, then she still needs finding. I will keep searching because she's out there somewhere. She doesn't deserve to just be lying in some ditch or something. I fully believe Bernadette deserves to be found and brought home. Every single missing and murdered person does, and I hope more and more creators tell her story and keep raising her voice because someone knows something they just might not know they do. There is so much more to this case, as always. Since the verdict came out, more and more information by the day is coming out about Bernadette and what she endured in this home. Investigators say while they never got the chance to meet her, after all they saw of Bernadette in TikTok, Snapchat, Facebook, and family photos, etc., it feels like they knew her. I myself dug into her social media. Her TikTok is full of incredible drawings. She really was an artist with immense talent. Her Facebook shows a bit of her photography and her true gift at it as well. When going through her TikToks, it will lead you to Scott and Sarah's TikToks, and it's such a distorted view of a house full of abuse. Remember, there are 9 other children whose lives have been blown apart by all of this, and have possibly been facing the same abuse. There's also a brand new baby sister that will never remember Bernadette and lost the chance to grow up with her big sister. Detective Inspector Jenkins said, "The force's investigation will never stop whilst Bernadette is out there somewhere. The more you look through someone's life, the more you feel like you know them," she says. "None of us have ever met her, but we've seen her on videos and TikToks and her social media accounts. And after speaking with friends as well, you just get the impression that she was a lovely girl, loved her photography, and had everything to live for." Thank you for tuning in on this update on Bernadette. I know it was long, but she deserves every second and more. And if she touched your heart like she's touched mine, you can visit sippingonsomecrime.com, click on her story, and there will be source links provided below where you can follow and learn more about her case and how you can help. Don't forget that every time you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, to share, like, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.